You're listening to KAOS 89.3 FM here in Olympia. And I got a guest on I'll let him introduce himself, but I've been chasing him for a long time. He's as busy as his dad, you know, I'm just grateful to see him and his wife's here with us, and I'll let our guest, because we're going to let him share.
My name is Willie Frank. I'm the vice chairman of the Nisqually Indian Tribe. I'm the son of Bill Frank Jr. Very honored to be here today, being on the radio, sitting here with Brian Evergreen. I'm an alum here at Evergreen, so it feels really good to be back here and, you know, talking about, you know, my dad and some of the different issues that our tribes are dealing with here in the state of Washington. I got my wife, Pegan, here with me, who is from the Wind River Reservation in Wyoming. And so we're both very happy to be here today. And I'm glad we're finally able to get on with Brian. We've been trying here for about a year and a half now, maybe even longer. So definitely glad to be on with you, sir.
Yeah, and I want to just give you this time to share what's on your heart, because I know that we're all touched. I know in our community, in Indian Country, and about your dad, and I know that you're still in the mourning process, and it's something that it's hard to talk about, I'm sure, and but I respect that, but I respect that you feel safe to come in and to share what's on your heart with our relatives here, because this is your home, you know. I'm just a guest in your backyard here, and so I wanted to give you that opportunity to share what's on your heart.
Well, my dad, he recently passed away about a month ago, you know, and for those who don't know, he was very well respected in Indian Country, as well as just the United States in general. Everything he's done for Indian people is, can't really, show the gratitude and, you know, what he's done and what he's meant for Indian Country. You know, he was arrested over 50 times in his life, you know, for standing up for his treaty right, you know, protecting his sovereignty. You know, the first time he was arrested was 14 years old for fishing on the banks of the Nisqually River. And he was actually at our family's property known as Frank's Landing. And it's about 10 miles down the river from the Nisqually Indian Reservation, you know. And at that time, our people weren't fishing off the reservation. You know, we were stuck on the reservation. You know, we weren't getting our fair share of the salmon. You know, the salmon would make it to a certain point on the river, and, you know, we weren't getting what we deserved. And so my dad and others, they said they're not going to stand for this. You know, they wanted to get their fish that was promised to us in our treaty, you know, and the treaty was obviously broken. You know, it's not the only treaty in the United States that was broken, but, you know, my dad and others, you know, they just got fed up, you know, and they just got tired of not being able to fish on their usual and accustomed area, you know. And Frank's Landing is off the Indian Reservation, but it's still along the banks of our Nisqually River, you know, and for him and our family, you know, they thought that this was their right, you know, to go and get their fish. You know, and I don't know how many times he got tear gassed, beaten up by the cops. I mean, you know, this is just some, you know, they're just exercising their treaty right. They're going fishing. You know, that's all they were doing. They were trying to survive. You know, it was a different time back then. It was, you know, back in the 1950s, late 40s, early 50s. You know, you got to think about what it looked like back then. There was no I-5. There was no, you know, not many paved roads. You know, he always told me, you know, I would always ask him what his first memory was. And he'd tell me, you know, he could remember riding on his dad's back across the valley there in Nisqually. You know, and that would be my grandpa, who lived to be 104 years old. You know, he was born in 1882, you know. So if you could imagine what that looked like back then compared to now, you know, you see the housing developments going up left and right here in Olympia. And, you know, they stood their ground, you know, my dad and my family and all of our Indian people throughout the state of Washington and throughout the United States. You know, they got tired of being pushed around by the government, you know. And, you know, my dad went to jail over 50 times. You know, there's pictures of him getting arrested in downtown Olympia, you know, for setting up fish-ins with our family and others. You know, As Long as the Rivers Run was shot in 1967. Carol Burns, who recently passed away, you know, she did this on her own. You know, she didn't have any support. Her and her family came down and stayed at Frank's Landing, you know, and they shot this video, you know, and this is a powerful video that myself and others are trying to get into our curriculum, into the schools in the state of Washington, throughout the, not just the state of Washington, but we want to get it in all the schools throughout the United States. You know, I feel that, you know, what they stood for, you know, we may not have what our Indian tribes and our Indian people have today if it wasn't for, you know, standing up for our treaty rights back then. You know, it was a very different time, you know, and my dad, you know, for somebody who went through everything he went through, he was definitely, you know, he could brush it off. You know, he was willing to work with anybody, you know, the governors, the senators, anybody, you know, who was willing to listen to his story and willing to work together as far as our natural resource and moving our people forward, you know, just in the state of Washington in general.
No, I totally agree. And what I'm trying to do myself is bring in, you know, the Bolt decision. It didn't just affect Native people. And that's one of the things that most people don't understand. It affects everyone, you know, everyone that's a human being. And we couldn't have, without the fish wars, what happened here in the Northwest, you know, Dr. King and all those other folks couldn't have moved forward with the civil rights. And that happened here in our backyard in Yelm, in that area. And so I want to bring that into where I'm working, because we do a lot of diversity in our place. And I feel that America always has amnesia when it comes to Native people. And they only go as far back, you know, like Tumwater. There was people there long before George Washington got there, you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? And so, like, that's the kind of stuff that we need to continue to do, and that's one of the things that I'm hoping that we can do together is work together with getting this out there to folks to have a better understanding of the area that we're all here. Because your dad said all the time, they're going to come, and they're not going to know about us, they're not going to know about the treaties, they're not going to know about any of this. Educate. And I can still hear him in the back mm-hmm. of my head, and then he punches me in the arm, you know, and I just really appreciate his ability to come into a room and to share like that, you know, like with his heart.
You know, I always remember that was the one thing he always taught me, you know, is to keep telling our story and keep educating these people, because, you know, they're going to try to wash our history away. You know, they're going to try to get rid of our history as far as what we stood for back then, you know, and as we get more and more into modern time, you know, it seems like we're getting farther and farther away from our culture, our treaty rights, just everything that, you know, we fought for, you know. And I could just see it in my dad as far as just the technology and how it's changing, you know. But for him, you know, he always go back to our treaty, you know, and as long as we have our treaties, that's what we gotta, you know, we gotta fight and protect those treaties, you know. Myself, I'm the vice chairman of Nisqually, and I see it, you know, dealing with Mount Rainier, you know, the tribe, we're trying to protect our usual and accustomed hunting grounds, you know, our gathering areas. You know, they're putting up fences now, they're putting up gates up by the mountain, you know, and they're cutting us off from our usual and accustomed grounds for gathering and hunting, you know, and that's not right. We have an area up there that's ours, you know, that's our treaty right to be up there. And you know, our berries, our roots, our different things, our elk, our deer, whatever it may be, you know. And we have people up there now, you know, trying to cut us off. They're putting gates up. You know, we have non-native people going up there and just kind of raping our bushes. They're taking our berries. They're taking everything up there, you know. And my dad, you know, he put that in my head, you know, that treaty is something that we need to just remember, that we always have that treaty. And regardless of how these casinos do or whatever direction we end up going in, we got to remember, you know, our treaty right. You know, it's definitely our biggest, you know, biggest thing that we have as Indian people.
So I didn't know about all the things that are happening up in Mount Rainier. And so is there any way that we can find out more about what's going on, so we can help be a better advocate?
We meet with the parks folks at least two or three times a year. Then the Nisqually tribe, we have our parks commission, and our parks commission goes up, and myself, I've been on the council since 2009, and I've been to a meeting with them every year. And it's just, I think it's going to take just all the tribes, because Mount Rainier, the Muckleshoot tribe, Puyallup, Cowlitz, and Nisqually all have access to Mount Rainier up there. And so I think as far as the tribes, we just have to come together, you know, and put our foot down, I think, you know. And as far as, you know, that was the one thing my dad, you know, I always think about, is I was able to see him testify, you know, 2 years ago back in D.C., you know, and he laid it out to him, you know, about what needs to be done, you know. And you know, he is always the most patient guy, but, you know, at the, when I saw him testify, you know, the patience is running, you know, it's almost up, you know. And as far as them recognizing what we have, they need to start doing it, you know. They need to start opening those gates and, you know, making sure we're able to have access to that.
Yeah, we have to work together. And one of the things that I remember about your dad is the last time that I really got to see him really speak was in March 13th. There was a gathering at Squatson, and tribal people were there, and the heads of state were there. And I got invited because I know Steve Robinson. And so I was sitting there with Rob Satiakam, and the governor was talking about all these things. He never once brought up salmon or the water or the environment, all these things. And I was going, oh, I was telling Rob, I was like, this is insane. I'd like to say something to him. And, you know, of course, I'm just a little guy, you know. Who follows him but your dad? And your dad hit everything that I was thinking about right there. And then, you know, but he started out with, Governor, I love you. Mm-hmm. But you're not talking about this, this, and this. And but I could tell he was tired. I told Rob, he's tired. He's been telling these folks for 50 years, you know, wise up, you know. And we don't, you know, and so I knew that we needed, for myself, I can just speak for myself, I need to step up even more, you know.
You know, he's always had respect for all of our governors, you know, since he started getting involved with all this. You know, he talks about, you know, when it goes back to, you know, Booth Gardner, who started our Centennial Accord back in 1989. You know, we go to Mike Lowry, we go to Gary Locke, and, you know, and Greg Wire, and now we're with Inslee. You know, and he's had a great relationship with all of those governors. But you're right, you know, he was, up until the day he passed away, I could tell he was starting to get tired of, you know, these guys not recognizing what they're supposed to be doing as far as, you know, water, salmon. You know, he got involved with the Puget Sound Partnership back in 2004. You know, that's 10 years ago now. And, you know, we're still not seeing any improvement. You know, we have our dead zones in the oceans, our rivers, you know. I mean, we have pollution, we have septic runoffs running into our rivers, running into our bay. You know, I mean, it's just getting to the point. But we keep building and building these houses, and I can't quite figure out. And I realize, you know, I don't want to say it's all about money, but, you know, it's starting to look like that, you know. And he has nothing but respect for Inslee, and I do too. I've met Jay a number of times, and I think he's a good governor, but he needs to, you know. My dad would always ask the question, who's in charge, you know? And, you know, he needs to step up as far as our fish consumption, our water quality. You know, once all of our, you know, the big corporations are gone or whatever it may be, you know, we're going to have to live off the land, you know. And if we don't have anything to live off of, what are we going to do? You know, everything's going to be polluted. Everything's going to be, it's going to be spoiled. It's going to be rotten. I mean, you know, the runoffs are just disgusting right now that are running off into our rivers and our streams and everything. So no wonder why our Chinook salmon and our chum salmon, all of our salmon, they're not making it back to the river anymore. You know, they get to a certain point and they end up dying because the water pollution and everything's just not good anymore.
Yeah, I was remember him saying they can only get as far as the Tacoma Narrow Bridge, mm-hmm. and then they're done. And that's just not right, folks. I mean, like, we have a lot of work to do to clean it up and, you know, follow that legacy of Billy. And I hear you, you know, and I'm feeling it, and I know that that we're gonna get more and more folks that are gonna be moving in here that need to hear these stories, and we need to work together.
I went and spoke to Fort Lewis back in November to some of our military guys up there. They were having a Native American, it was a culture week-long program they were doing at Fort Lewis on educating our soldiers about our, you know, our Indian customs, our culture, our traditions, you know. And you talk to these military folks who have come from the East Coast, the Midwest, wherever, down south, you know, they don't have a clue about what went on here, you know, at the mouth of our rivers, the fights that went on, you know, to protect our treaty rights. And I see it firsthand fishing along the Nisqually River. We start fishing at the end of July and we go until New Year's, you know, but we still get in fights with these sports fishermen along the river all the time. You know, they pull our nets in, you know, they take our fish out of there, they'll cut our nets up, you know, and they're just complete ignorant still. You know, we have some of our elders who fish on the river. You know, they fish at the concrete bridge on Old 99 Highway there, and they're dealing with these military guys who just show no respect to our people. You know, they pull their nets in, they still, you know, run us down. They still don't understand, you know, what are these Indians doing here? How come they're able to, you know, use these nets and fish? You know, and so we've been going back and forth, you know, for, you know, 100 years now on this, you know, and it's still... You have the ignorant people coming in, and so it's our job to educate them, you know, and it probably won't work, but you still got to try anyway. You know, some people are set in their ways, you know, and that's fine, but, you know, at least we can try to educate them and, you know, teach them our history a little bit.
And I think the majority of the folks are hearing, but we do get those. It only takes a little bit to spoil everything, and so... I think it is important to educate and keep educating, and that's why it's important for the people, you know, you to come in and to share, because this is your home, this is your land, it always has been, always will be, since time immemorial, you know, and so we have to bring that voice of the area here for people to... Oh, I didn't know that. And so I always say, and I say this on the bus all the time, I'm just giving you the information. So if you continue to do this genocidal approach to Native people, then I have a problem with that. But I'm giving you the information that you need to make a better choice.
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, I think it's going to just, I think about this with our younger generation of Indian kids also. You know, a lot of our own people, you know, don't realize what it took to get us. I honestly believe that we may not have casinos if it wasn't for people back in the 60s and 70s standing up for their treaty rights. You know, we may not have, you know, the casinos have brought nothing but good things and bad things on, you know, it's got its ups and downs. You know, at Nisqually, we're doing really well. You know, we're able to pay for our young kids to go to college. You know, we have a record number of kids going to college now, which is fantastic. You know, my dad always talked about our people, you know, we need to be at the same playing field as the non-natives. You know, we need to have doctors, we need to have lawyers. You know, we need to have our biologists just as strong as the state's biologists. You know, we need to be at the same level, you know, working together, you know. And so right now, you know, if our kids need to realize the opportunity they have, you know, as far as being able to go to school, you know, places like Evergreen, you know, I mean, this is an amazing school, you know, especially for kids that want to learn about their native culture. You know, I mean, we have our beautiful Longhouse here. We have great programs here. You know, we have a good master's program here. And I think, you know, for any of our kids to want to go to school in the state, you know, they should really look at Evergreen, because this is a very good native school. You know, it teaches a lot about our native people here. So.
Yeah, and also just for folks like Nisqually, I know that you said you guys are doing good, but also Yelm and all the neighboring places benefit. You know, I know that you guys just bought a bunch of fire trucks.
Yeah,
the city
for
and
the city of Lacey. We purchased a few fire trucks in the last couple of years now. You know, and we have a great partnership with the city of Lacey in general. You know, we meet with their city council, you know, at least three or four times a year, you know, to discuss the moving forward. As, you know, I mean, I always think, you know, 15, 20 years ago, we'd have never met with the city of Lacey. You know, you would have never been able to come to, you know, sitting down at the same table with them. You know, I guess, you know, that they realize how important our tribes are becoming in the state of Washington, how powerful they are. You know, I don't want to say it's because of gaming or anything, but, you know, we're sitting at the table now with these state officials. You know, and before, we weren't even allowed in the room. You know, my dad always told me stories about how crazy it was back in the early 80s as far as trying to sit at the table with these guys. Now they're more than willing to do it. You know, I grew up around a lot of state officials, around, you know, a lot of political figures, you know, and it's definitely a good thing to move forward together, I think, as far as the city of Olympia, you know, Lacey, Tumwater. They can all benefit from our tribes as far as employment. You know, our casinos are giving jobs out to non-natives, you know, and we're putting a lot of people to work in the city of Thurston County.
Yeah, and I know it's the same for Squaxin. They're the largest employer in the Mason County.
Yeah, Squaxin, you know, and they got the Skokomish tribe as the lucky dog down there. You know, Chehalis, you know, I just think as the bigger our tribes get, you know, I think the more people, the more non-natives it's going to affect as far as giving them job opportunities.
Yeah, and the native folks have always been good neighbors.
Yeah,
and that's
definitely.
That's the whole thing. It's never been you know, no word, but received well, because your dad and many others fought. I always say this, I couldn't, for all those folks that paved the way, I couldn't be sitting here today talking right now on the radio.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, somebody gave up a life, or they fought really hard, you know,
to get you and I to where we are today.
So I know that you're
no, we got time, man.
Oh, we got time.
We can keep going. Yeah.
Okay, so again, I'm gonna do a station ID here, and then we'll be back with Willie Frank Jr. III.
Do you want to know what's going on in Native America? Tune in to National Native News on Chaos. National Native News brings you the top stories from Indigenous communities across the United States and around the world. Our perspective is Native, but the stories appeal to audiences with a diverse perspective. You can listen to National Native News weekday afternoons at 3 on Chaos, Olympia's listener-supported, volunteer-powered community radio station.
YWCA of Olympia. Why the why? Here's why. The YWCA of Olympia is a nonprofit organization serving girls, women, and their families in the South Sound since 1945. Throughout the years, the YWCA of Olympia has worked to change history from civil rights to women's rights, from advocacy for women's health care to ending violence against women and girls. In fact, local organizations such as Safe Place, the Rape Relief Center, the Refugee Center, the Crisis Clinic, all began as YWCA of Olympia programs. The YWCA is the voice for every woman, speaking out and taking action on behalf of women and girls. The YWCA of Olympia, in partnership with over 300 volunteers each year, supports the advancement of all women in our community. To find out more or to get involved, visit ywcaofolympia.org. And that's why.
Oh.
And you're listening to KAOS 89.3 FM, and we're still here with Willie Frank III, and I'm real excited because, like we were talking a little bit about some memories, but Willie here, he knows it. He's been a hard one to get down. He's always in a meeting or going around and talking to the folks, but we're definitely going to be. I'm hoping that this will be the first of many visits that we can continue to educate and the people, all of us, myself included, because I want to be a better steward here too, you know, and respect the land that I'm walking on.
Yeah, definitely. I'd definitely like to be able to, you know, start coming on here, you know, every couple weeks maybe. I was just talking, you know, a little bit about the fishing wars and the fishing struggles that went on, you know, and Carol Burns' video, As Long as Rivers Run. You can find it at salmondefense.org. You know, and this is a very powerful video. You know, this is, you know, it shows our people getting tear gassed, arrested, you know, along the Nisqually River. It's definitely a powerful video. You know, and my dad always talked about George Bolt. You know, he said Bolt was one of the most courageous men he ever met, because he took the, you know, he took our case, you know, back in 1970, 73, 74 there. You know, he was the one guy who took the case as far as, you know, the judge. You know, and Bolt took a big hit as far as, you know, the non-native community. You know, I mean, they had, you know, dolls of Bolt being hung up from trees, you know, I mean, from the non-native folks. You know, he definitely took a big hit. You know, he was a guy that stood, he was willing to listen, I guess. You know, he was willing to listen to our people. You know, and my dad always talked about how he knew we were in a good situation when one of our grandmas got up to testify and she didn't speak English. And she started talking Indian to my grandpa. And, you know, Slade Gorton, who was the attorney back then going against our people, you know, he got up and, you know, told the judge, you know, hey, you can't do that. You know, you got to speak English, you know, and Bolt said no, she can speak the language to Grandpa, and Grandpa can translate it. You know, and my dad said, and others who I've talked to about that day have said that was kind of the changing point as far as, you know, us getting an equal opportunity in a fair trial, because that wasn't the first time we tried this, you know, and, you know, that was kind of my dad said that was a very special time when Bolt did that, you know, and, my dad always called him the Swede, you know, and Bolt, you know, if it wasn't for George Bolt, I don't know where we might be right now either. You know, he was I had never had the opportunity to meet him, but from what I hear, he was a very, very great man. And, you know, he took our case and he listened to our people. It's very good.
Absolutely. And I've been reading, the more that I read about Mr. George Bolt, I read in 78 after the case was people were still doing all lawful things there, and he went into the court and with all the heads of state and the justice department, and he said that what do I hear that's going on, you're not upholding my decision and you need to uphold it, and he revoked the state's right.
He was you know, that was 5 years, 4 years after the final decision came down, and he was still, you know, ready to go to bat for the tribes, you know, as far as treating them equal, you know, 50% of our harvest, you know. And, you know, I always heard from many fishermen, not just my dad, but all of our Indian people, the record number of fish that the state folks were catching at the time with the big purse seine boats. I mean, they were catching thousands, you know, compared to our couple hundred that we were catching along the river. You know, I mean, that doesn't even equal what our people were getting, you know, and it just wasn't fair back then, you know, we're still having battles over this, you know, and I think we're going to have battles until the last fish is caught, you know, and I hope that I don't see that in my lifetime. You know, I hope that we're able to bring our salmon back, you know, bring the wild run back. You know, we have our hatchery, which is going very, you know, we have a very good hatchery in Nisqually, but, you know, one day I'd like to see our wild salmon come back, and I hope we can do something to bring it back.
I think so, and I think that I just think being able to have this kind of dialogue and to share with folks, and to for myself, to know what I need to do, to make that happen. You know, I don't know the history, but also how do we move forward together? Because that was one of the other things that your dad taught us. And I was just, when we were at the memorial, just to see how your dad did do that. Like, he wove all those people together. And he got all those people talking. And most of them, I want to say most, made better decisions because of your dad and because he was able to educate them about the treaties, for one, but how to be that better steward, because he lived it. You know, I know that I was listening to an interview too, and how much family was important to him, because he was giving a speech and he told us all what to do, and then he said, I gotta go to a basketball game because I got somebody playing basketball. I think it was you. So, you know, and I knew how important it was for him to be with family and to leave you a living world.
You know, I'm very fortunate. You know, everybody would always ask me, they say, well, how does your dad act when he's not, you know, is he the same person? You know, and yes, he was. He was always, when I was young growing up, I mean, there's a couple of times where he raised his voice and that was enough for me to set me straight, you know, but he was always, he was always there for me, you know, and I had two great parents, you know, my dad and my mom. You know, they were both great parents, and I'm very fortunate, you know, because being on the council, I see a lot of our younger kids who are struggling as far as getting that guidance in life, you know, as far as their family. And, you know, and now that I think about my dad being gone, you know, I realize how lucky I was to just have him in my life for 32 years, you know, and I have an older brother who's 53 now, you know, and he grew up in the heart of the fishing wars, you know, and so he's one of the only kids that were at Frank's Landing during the fishing struggle, you know, so he always told me stories, you know, about how difficult it was, you know, and it was a tough time back then, but, you know, I think my dad, you know, as he got older, you know, he was always there for me. You know, him and my mom both, you know, they were in very high demanding jobs, but they always made sure time for myself and others, you know, so I couldn't ask for a better guy, definitely. And I think not just myself, but many other people, you know, he was a role model, a father figure, an uncle, you know, whatever you want to say, you know. And I told his doctor, I said, you know, you got to at least keep him around till 100, you know. Well, he didn't quite make it that long, but you know, his legacy will always be in myself and my family. You know, I think they'll always remember all the positive words that he would always tell us. You know, I talked to my friends who I grew up with, who a lot of them, they didn't have, you know, a dad, a male role model in their life. You know, and my dad kind of stood in for a lot of those guys, you know, and they affected a lot of people, you know, in a positive way. You know, I don't think there's some people that may have some negative stuff to say, but, you know, it's everything he ever did was for everybody. It was never for him. You know, his speeches, what he did protecting our land, our water, our natural resource, it was never about him. It was about all of our people, you know, not just in the state of Washington, but Indian country in general. You know, he was a hell of a guy, you know. So.
Absolutely. And I just, I know that for myself, I'm a better person for have, met your dad, and I got to hang out with him, and I just his laugh and his yoo-hoo, you know, I just remember all these little things that, you know, for myself, the memories that I have, and that being able to move forward and help the people, and that was the other thing that your dad did, and was all people, human beings, you know, and he brought that out in everyone that he touched. So
well, it's funny because we'd go to dinner, you know, downtown Olympia, wherever. People would come up and just shake his hand and just, you know, they'd say thank you, you know, for everything you've done for, and these are non-natives, you know, they'd say thank you for everything you've done for our natural resource in general, you know. And like I said, you know, it wasn't just about the tribes, it was about, you know, he truly believed in our, you know, our water, our fish, our natural resource, you know, I mean, he believed in Mother Nature in general. You know, it's funny because we had a couple Jehovah's Witness come to our house, you know, about a month and a half ago, and they asked him what he believed in, you know, and he said, well, I believe in our fish, I believe in our water, I believe in our way of life as far as, you know, our natural resource, our trees, the birds and everything, you know, and they kind of laughed and they said, okay, great. they went the other way, you know. So, you know, he wasn't a very religious man, but he believed in Mother Nature, you know, and everything it stood for.
That's absolutely, to me, that's the spirit. And you know, and you can't think of your dad without thinking of the spirit of the salmon and the cedar trees, and you know, and I like what one of the gentlemen, I can't remember his name, but he said we have about 300 years of Billy Franks here, and you're one of them, and to continue, you know, the educational piece, I think, is very important for us, and you know, I know that. Can't express how I feel with words, with you coming and sharing and talking, especially about your dad, and because it's still pretty fresh. And but he, you know, he did touch everybody that came in contact with him. I remember once a guy told me, I saw Billy, and he remembered my name. I haven't seen him in 10 years, and you know, And I said, yep, he was that way. He could always remember folks. And, you know, he just was a really good human being. And like we were talking a little bit at the break, you know, I don't know if myself could come out of, and I've said this about many folks, but if I was being attacked like that, my family was being attacked like that, and all those things that happened, how he really did, you know, he took the high road, you know, and he, because I know it wasn't always easy for him. You know, and I know Nancy talked about that, and I couldn't imagine being in a courtroom and having all those people doing those things, and he just stood up and told the truth.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you know, I mean, he had a way of, you know, looking, like we talked about, staying the course, staying the path. You know, he had a way of looking at the end of the road, the brightness, the end of the road there. You know, he never held any grudges, you know, and I mean, him and I would always talk about some of the people that used to be Indian fighters, you know, and attack our Indian people, you know, and he never had a bad thing to say about them. He always would, I couldn't understand it, you know, for what they put him through, you know, I he has always said nothing positive, you know, and that was one of the main things. I had so much respect for my dad, you know. It was amazing to hear him say that. You know, he never held any grudges. You know, he would do whatever it took for the cause. So it's definitely a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that we've got a little bit more time, and I just wanted to give you a chance to express if we didn't share what anything that you want, or if your wife would like to say something. No, or. No, okay, so.
Well, you know, my dad, he was 82 years old, you know, and, you know, he had a stroke last year, and it was pretty scary to see a man who was, you know, I looked at him as Superman, you know, he was never hurt, never sick, you know, and he had the stroke, and he recovered 100% from it, you know, and up until the day he passed away, you know, he was working, and I'd always ask him, I'd say, Dad, you know, are you ever going to slow down? You know, and he said, well, if I slow down, I'm going to get old. You know, and he said, our Indian people never retire. He said, you know, we don't retire. We work until the day we can't work anymore. You know, and even for him, that final day, you know, I woke him up that day, and he was ready to go to work. You know, he got ready for his day, you know, and it just so happened he didn't make it, you know, the rest of the day. But, you know, he was still ready to go 100 miles an hour up until his last breath, you know, and you know, his energy level is amazing. I always say, you know, he has 20 times more energy than your average 18-year-old. You know, being 82 years old, he was still rolling. You know, he was definitely one of a kind, you know.
I couldn't keep up with
him. No, I couldn't either. You know, and I think that came from, you know, he built power lines, you know, when he was younger. Him and his two brothers, you know, they built power lines in Montana, Idaho, Washington. You know, and he would drive, you know, he'd drive 4 or 5 hours a day, you know, going back and forth from wherever they were working back to the landing, you know, and he knew what he had to do and to put food on the table, you know, and he would give our family, you know, the better things in life back then. And it wasn't a lot back then, you know, and it's funny because my dad never complained about food, you know, my cooking, my wife's cooking, any cooking, you know, we go to restaurants, he'd never complain. He'd just eat whatever was, you know, put in front of him. But up until, you know, about a year ago, we'd always get this one dish, and he finally told me he didn't like it. And I said, Dad, you know, he said, well, I didn't like it the first time I tried it. And I said, well, why didn't you tell me that? You know, and it was just for him growing up in the era he did. They didn't have a choice of food to eat. You know, it was whatever was put in front of them. And I always think about that and I laugh, you know, because he'd just do, you know, he'd eat whatever we put in front of him. You know, it was always whatever, you know, he was always, you know, just never wanted to say anything bad about anything, I guess.
That's awesome. So, do we get a little bit more time, or
sure.
Do you want to play another song?
Yeah, go
different,
for it.
Different one there.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. So, you're listening to KAOS 89.3 FM here in Olympia, Washington, and we're speaking with Willie Frank III, and we're gonna hear another song here from the Squally Canoe family. We're gonna play a different one though.
This is Willie Frank III of the Nisqually Indian Tribe, and you're listening to KAOS 89.3 FM in Olympia, Washington, Evergreen State College.
Thank you. Thank you for that. And we were just having a little chat at break, and, memories, and I just think it's great to be able to share. But last time that we were in a room, me and Willie, we were witness to a signing of... Well, there was two signings, but the first one we were there for was to waive all the fishing rights away. And it's totally a historical moment. And for your dad, you know, he was alive during that time, so it's really exciting.
Well, you know, I went down there that day, and my dad wasn't able to make it, so I went down there and I stood in for him. you know, and I talked with Jay Inslee, you know, about how big of a issue this was, you know, for my dad and others who were arrested, you know, in these pretty much bogus charges, you know, and it, I always wanted to be able to look and see what my dad's rap sheet looked like, you know, because we'd go skiing in Canada, we'd go up to Canada for basketball tournaments, whatever it was, and he'd always get stopped at the border. And this is a guy who's in his 70s, one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet, getting stopped at the border. And I always wanted to look and see what his rap sheet said. Well, you know, I'm very happy now that, you know, he's passed on, but his record is clear now. You know, they did away with all those bogus charges that he had back in the 60s, 50s. You know, he was arrested for, you know, basically fishing in closed waters. There's a lot of those, you know, just a bunch of BS, you know. He was definitely standing up for his treaty right, and this was a very big day. You know, there's a lot of tribal leaders down there. Senator John McCoy was the one who pushed this issue as far as getting it signed by the governor, getting it put through, you know. And John is a Tulalip tribal member, and I look up to John a great deal. He's in a position, you know, to help our Indian people, you know, and we have the Centennial Accord coming up in a couple weeks, actually, you know. And
it's going to be here at Evergreen.
Yeah, it's going to be here, you know, and it's going to be a very very big thing, you know. 1989 was the first one, you know, and Booth Gardner was the governor at the time, and he was the one who kind of, you know, opened the door as far as getting the tribe and the state to sit down at the table, you know, and discuss the issues rather than being in a courtroom. You know, this is probably my sixth or seventh Centennial Accord I've been to. You know, I went to a few before I got on council, but this is the fifth one now that I've been on the tribal council in Nisqually. And, you know, I learn something new every time I go. So, you know, Gregoire was our governor for the last three of them that I went to, and this will be Inslee's second Centennial Accord. So, we'll see how it goes. You know, I hope we get some of the issues. I know a lot of the tribal leaders, fish consumption is a very big issue, you know, and, my dad and others at the Northwest Indian Fish Commission, Mike Graham, Justin Parker, Ed Johnstone, have been going back to Washington, D.C., you know, for the past 3 or 4 years now with this white paper that they put together with our treaty rights at risk, you know, and they're beating the door down, you know, trying to. I know President Obama has this, you know, paper, and we're trying to get these guys to recognize a lot of the stuff that they're asking for in the treaty rights at risk. So, you know, we'll see how the Centennial Accord goes. You know, I hope we can get something done, definitely.
Yeah, I think it'll be good. And I know that, especially now that we have Micah here, McCarty here as a tribal liaison to the school, that we're going to be bringing a lot more things into the school that highlight Native folks. And but, yeah, going back, I was thinking about some of those, you know, Ed Johnstone, and he'll be coming in on the 29th, talk a little bit about treaty rights at risk, and, you know, continue to, I know I've said this a lot, but it is about the education. It is about Definitely. The outreach, and for us to be able to have a dialogue. And I think that the Centennial Accord, I've gone a lot over the years. I just volunteer, go and set up, but I listen to, my thing is the water. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's going to be...
it's like gold now.
Yes.
Water's gold, you know, yeah. And I don't think a lot of people realize that.
Right, and we're lucky around here. We still have some good drinking water. Yeah. There's some places that are drinking sewer water.
Yeah, we just came from a conference last week. It was a water conference down in at the Rincon Tribe from Southern California there. And they're about 40 minutes east of San Diego, and they're running out of water down there. You know, they got a big drought going on. You know, they got fires going on in the hills. You know, there's no rain down there. There's no water, you know, and it's just, you know, that was the topic last week at this conference, you know, and it seemed like everybody that got up to speak, that did a presentation, you know, talked about how precious our water is. You know, and I think we take it for granted around here. I mean, I'm sure I do myself. You know, we don't realize that we can drink out of the faucet and it's still good water.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have to drink bottled water all the time.
Yeah, I remember we had grandmother, Mandam, she came to do a water blessing once, and she said that, you know, the rain, and she really got me thinking, because I do it sometimes when it rains, like, oh, it's raining again, you know, but but you know, I catch myself now, it's like, no, we're blessed, we're being blessed, we're lucky we have rain. Some people don't have it, we have fresh water. And I mean, I'm not saying I always went there, but I do catch myself sometimes that I
we haven't had rain for a few weeks now, you know, and we need some rain around here, you know. Always brings our fish in, you know. We always know we get a good rainfall the week before fishing season. We always know we're going to have a good week of fishing. So I don't want to see this to be a dry summer. I hope we get some rain coming up here. You know, I know people don't want to hear that in the state of Washington, because we do get a lot of rain, but we're definitely way below our average, I think, right now.
Yeah, we do need it. But I have one question, because the culverts, you know, your dad talked a lot about culverts. Can we talk a little bit why it's important for those to be removed?
Yeah. You know, my dad and other tribal leaders, you know, they, the culvert case started, I think, back in 99, maybe somewhere around there, early 2000s. You know, a lot of our tribes, you know, culverts, they were put in right on a lot of our main rivers, you know, from Upper Skagit to Snohomish, you know, coming down I-5 corridor. You know, and a lot of our tribes, you know, it affected our the water, it affected our fish, it affected everything that flowed into these rivers, you know. And I don't think a lot of people realized how big of an issue the culverts were. You know, they were definitely an issue for our people to get involved with. And as like Salmon Defense, you know, we have our nonprofit is Salmon Defense. It's a partner with the Northwest Indian Fish Commission, you know, and we definitely were able to fund some activities with the culverts through Salmon Defense. And that's what Salmon Defense is there for, is to help our tribes. You know, when we do have issues with water, culverts, whatever it may be, you know, Salmon Defense is going to be kind of hopefully the front runner in a lot of that stuff. So
yeah, and I know you probably have to get going. So I do appreciate you taking time to come in with us, and I hope that you come back and share.
This is great.
You know, and it's really important for all of us to hear. And I know the saying that I love is like, I'm just a witness. I'm here to witness and make better decisions as I learn, and to have the people that lived here. You know, I hear your dad all the time. We've always lived on these watersheds. We know the water better than anyone else. Why are you not listening? You know, if you start listening, and I know, like, you talked about the partnership, and I know in the 70s he had the same paper that he gave, and nobody was listening, and so at least Gregoire was open and listening, and hopefully we can move forward together as all of us live here in the backyard.
I hope so, man.
All right. Well, thanks for coming. We'll play another song here, and you're listening to KAOS 89.3 FM here in Olympia.